afternoon and welcome to the Jason Rancho on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming live on the KTTH smartphone app, which means you get to watch the show because we now have video cameras here. We have web cameras all around the place. King 5 just learned that freeways aren't safe for pedestrians. Breaking news. It is what's trending.
What's trending on the road?
I honestly don't understand the framing of this King 5 story. This is the literal title, and it starts with a quote from the piece. Not a safe place to be as a pedestrian. Two people killed on I-5 within 24 hours. So I-5 is still a freeway, yes? Or does it identify as a sidewalk now?
I mean, it is a freeway. You're going slowly on it usually, but yes.
It is a freeway. Okay. So I want to make sure, because you never know. Things change, and I'm not always on top of it. Sometimes I miss stories. So that hasn't changed. So yes, King 5, it is dangerous to be a pedestrian on the freeway. Now, when they tell you that two people were killed on I-5, tragic, by the way, but they make it sound like they were killed in the same spot, which would maybe be a story, right? I mean, well, okay, that's odd. You generally don't see anyone killed on a freeway, but you saw two killed on the freeway in the same spot within 24 hours. What's going on? Well, one was in Arlington. The other one was in Seattle, downtown. Now, they didn't give many details on the Arlington issue, but they did give some details on the I-5 Seattle one. 20-year-old kid was running across I-5, ends up getting hit by a car, as would likely happen if you're running across any freeway. That's just, especially at night, it is going to happen. Or you should assume it's going to happen. But you know it's going to happen. Just make that basic assumption. Don't know why he was running across. Don't know any of those details yet. In fact, they're still trying to get those details. Here's Washington State Patrol Trooper Rick Johnson to King 5.
We don't know why the individual was running across the freeway, but unfortunately they were deceased. The vehicle was traveling southbound, and there's a little curb there at University, and unfortunately struck the pedestrian.
Okay. Why are we framing this around it being dangerous for pedestrians on the freeway?
You're asking me?
Yeah, I'm legitimately wondering why the framing of this story. Because it makes it sound like, at least in one of these cases, it was like a shock. And I'm legitimately trying to figure out why they decided to frame it this way. Because whenever we cover any news story, especially when you are in talk radio, you're framing stories in a way that gets people interested in listening. Or, you know, if I'm doing a blog, and again, I write analysis for the most part, I frame stories and issues to get your interest so you click it and actually get something out of the story. The same is true usually when we're talking about just straight news stories. So what was the value here? What was the value to the consumer of news? They learned something? No. Did they get specific details about a news story? No, not even that. And so now you've got a reporter, whoever it is, they have to fill like 24 seconds more in their package, otherwise the editor is going to yell at them. And so they decided to go to Trooper Johnson to give you guidance on what to do if you ever think about being a pedestrian on a freeway. And it turns out the answer is don't be a pedestrian on the freeway. Did you know that? Maybe we did learn something.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was actually, you know, I take back all my criticism, but I learned a lot.
We get them, you know, not all the time, but we do have pedestrians that end up on the freeway and get struck. If you can't see in your vehicle, get out, get on the other side of a barrier or a guard pole and call us. If it's broken down, call us, stay in your vehicle, call us, and we will come.
Now, that's good advice for the most part. Obviously, if there's an active emergency in which it's not safe to stay in your car, you should leave. You should exit. But you don't exit the side where there's oncoming traffic if you can get out of that. Now, I've been stuck on the side of a freeway one time because a tire blew out on a car. Didn't quite act the way that I thought it would from a tire blowout. Like in the movies, and then it's on your, you see sparks flying. It just felt like there was something wrong with the tire. So I pulled over and looked. I was like, oh my God, how'd that happen? But I was nervous for a bit because you're on the side of the road and it's just weird and you've got speeding cars. You know what you do if you have to get out of the car, which for me, I had to stay away from the road, stay away from the streets. I didn't need any advice from King Five for that, but I am very grateful that they decided to give it to me anyway. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
Pete Buttigieg was on, it's called Inside with Jen Psaki on MSNBC. She's supposed to be taking you inside. She's got insider access to the people that are always on television and she used to work with. So it's not really all that impressive that she's able to book them. It's like me booking Ben Shapiro on the show. Yeah, I've known him for 2 decades. So yeah, I can just send him a text and ask. It's not, I don't have like, oh, insider access. He's got, yeah, no. He made an interesting comment in so many ways while talking about crime in DC. And it just follows the long line of gaslighting that's been going on courtesy of Democrats talking about a crime crisis that they created.
So we need to talk about the reality here. And again, there is a lot of funding and a lot of energy going into telling a different story, especially on ideological news outlets and online. But the simple facts and the simple reality are right here staring us in the face, including the fact that I can safely walk my dog to the Capitol today in a way that you couldn't do when we all got here.
Oh, man. It's so weird. Because last year, you had the deadliest year on record. You saw the largest violent crime spike of any major U.S. city. That was last year. You got there before then, right? You've been here for a few years now? Yeah, okay. So that's a lie. When he made these comments, when these comments aired, there was a quadruple shooting 6 miles southwest of where he was. Quadruple shooting, according to Fox 5. A few days before that, a woman was caught in crossfire in southeast D.C., narrowly escaped being injured by ducking before a stray bullet shattered her car windshield. We talked with a friend of mine on this show who was walking in downtown D.C. with another friend who got randomly stabbed. That could have been my friend. So what exactly is the purpose of just flat out lying like that? I'm sure Pete Buttigieg feels comfortable because he's got security. So I'm sure he feels comfortable. And something tells me he doesn't live in the neighborhoods that have been seeing a lot of the violence. Probably doesn't visit there either.
He's usually on paternity leave.
Yes, so. He's just taking time off again because you can extend it. You don't have to take it all at once. But what is, you know, we're talking about what's the value of these things. What's the value? He's hoping that he's going to reach some people who don't understand what life is really like in major cities. And there are going to be some people, there's some people whose heads are still in the sand. I still hear from folks in Seattle who still give me a hard time because of my coverage on Fox News about how I point out, well, we have a whole lot of crime. And, you know, last year we hit a record high number of homicides. That's not good, right? We saw an increase, a surge of stolen vehicles. That's not good, right? Oh, that's just living in big cities. No, it's not. That's not just living in big cities. And by the way, if that were the case, no one would want to live in a big city. Sure, crime happens. You're not going to be able to stop all crime. But when you've got crime that is occurring as a direct result of policy decisions that are made or strategies that are initiated, those are crimes that were avoidable. They were preventable. They would not have occurred if you did not allow them to, if you did not embolden criminals the way that they've been emboldened. D.C. was one of the leading cities, not just to defund, but to really dismantle police, the police department. And as a direct result of that, you saw a ton of crime, and they had to walk all of it back. Now, of course, Pete Buttigieg doesn't want to lead with that because Democrats are very good at branding. And who was behind the Black Lives Matter movement? Yeah, Democrats. They wore it on their sleeves, sometimes literally, with their little armbands, BLM. These people are responsible, and they hope you don't have a memory of it. Because they go on networks like MSNBC or CNN, which did not cover the Antifa riots. They still pretend Antifa doesn't exist, which is odd because I've covered it from inside of their rallies where they quite literally chant Antifa, hold up flags that say Antifa, and identify as Antifa, but it doesn't actually exist. It's all made up. It's a figment of the conservative imagination. Right. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Anti-Semitism.
Last week, we told you the story of a bunch of anti-Semites who decided yet again to wreak havoc on the UW college campus, this time doing a sit-in at the Hub. They vandalized a lot of property. They very clearly broke the law, and they also harassed a student who was showing his support for Israel. But you're not allowed to do that in front of the anti-Semites. They get immediately triggered. And so that student who had an Israeli flag, it was stolen from him. And when he reported it to the UWPD, didn't quite get the response that he was hoping for. He's a first-year graduate student, doesn't want us using his name so that he can avoid maybe some of the on-campus turmoil that could happen as a result. But he joins me now. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
So you decided to show your support for Israel, push back. You are not Jewish. What made you decide to push back the way that you did?
Yeah, I think so. There has been this strong anti-Israel movement here at the University of Washington's campus. But I think it's important to show to the bystanders and to the anti-Israel activists themselves that there is the support for Israel. There is the Zionist movement on campus. And I think by showing that to the public, whether it's directly or through online, I think it's important that we can show to the public that there are people who are willing to resist those anti-Israel, especially the violent types of demonstrations, vandalism.
Yeah, and unfortunately, there's a lot of that going around, not just UW, but college campuses across the country. Take us through that day or afternoon. You were walking around with the Israel flag. What were you doing? What were you saying? And what was the response?
Yeah, so I was not initially holding the Israeli flag. I just found the information that there's going to be yet another anti-Israel rally, and I wasn't expecting too much from it. I was just I was surprised by how radical the anti-Israel movement here on campus is, I have been trying to, record and monitor the anti-Israel rallies here on campus. But honestly, because there have been so many anti-Israel rallies, I was not really expecting anything new. But after I started walking, like following them when they were marching through campus, and then when they got to the Husky Union building, I realized that, oh, they are planning something different this time. And then I realized that they are doing the occupation and storming and occupation of the Husky Union building. And because Husky Union building is an open building, I decided to just go inside the building through a different door. They started chanting through megaphones and so on. I realized that all the employees, the front desk employees of the building, evacuated. And then some people started chaining themselves with each other on the first floor. So when I was there, they didn't start vandalizing the building.
Yeah, it seems like the vandalism started once the building was officially taken over and basically everyone was gone except for activists.
Yeah, so, I mean, I am a student. I have other things to do, so I decided to go out. But the thing is that as I was just peacefully filming the protesters, they were constantly trying to block my camera. and block my movement inside the building so that, well, basically to intimidate me and to pressure me to get out of the building. But I just happened to have my Israeli flag inside my backpack because I organized a pro-Israel event on campus through a campus club that I'm a part of. So I had my Israeli flag in my backpack. So I just pulled it out and walked out of the building while holding the Israeli flag. I mean, it's just, it's a cheap, it's not an expensive flag.
Sure.
But the crowd outside the building immediately started shaming me, booing me as soon as they saw my Israeli flag. And one of the, one member of the mob walked up to me and snatched my flag away from my hand. And some of the protesters said that, oh, it's in the dumpster now. Mm-hmm. So I had an understanding. I was able to guess where the flag was. But I mean, I think it would have been a dangerous idea to try to retrieve it.
You're probably smart not to go in and try to recover it. But you did call UW police. What did they tell you?
Yeah, so because it was obviously a crime that happened on site, and also, I mean, there was a chance that, I mean, the police can either find the exact person who stole it or at least find the flag. So I called 911 and I was connected. So because I was on the UW campus, I was connected to the dispatcher of UW Police mm-hmm. Department. And I was actually transferred to one of the officers on campus. But what the officer said was that because they don't have enough officers available, I will have to file the report via the phone call. So I provided all the information. I mean, to be honest, I don't remember much of the details because there were so many people. Yeah. There were so many people shouting different things. And yeah, so.
But the officer did not respond in person, which is a problem, especially given the fact that you've got a whole bunch of anti-Semites taking over a building and they were clearly committing acts of vandalism. The police should have been there anyway.
Yes, I think I was surprised. So first of all, I was surprised that throughout the demonstration, I didn't see a single uniformed police officer, even though the protesters were already, I mean, storming the building mm-hmm. and doing the disruptive sit-in. And second, I was surprised that the officer decided to not respond in person because it was a crime scene, but it was an active crime scene. So the situation was already getting out of control. So I still don't know why the UWPD was not able to respond.
I mean, I'm assuming that they were told basically in cases like this to stand down because, you know, they're not just anti-Semites in that building. They were probably all of them were anti-cop as well, which anyone who pays attention to anything that they write on the wall when they're vandalizing knows that they don't hold cops in high regard. Do you feel that the campus is allowing this to get out of hand?
Well, you know, as you probably have seen, I think the university issued a statement against this kind of vandalism. But I think the fundamental problem with the university is that they have been trying to just ignore these mm-hmm. protests and in the hope that they will just forget about the movement at some point.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's hard to ignore all of that, right? I mean, you've got not only students, but you have professors who are screaming out the same anti-Semitism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's particularly for this sit-in that happened last week. There was another pro-Israel friend who stayed in the building for a while after I left the building, who actually pretended to be a neutral person. And according to him, there was one UW PD safety person outside the building. But when he told the UW PD person what was happening inside, about the vandalism against the paintings and so on, the UW safety person said that, the UW safety person didn't know anything about what's going on inside. So there was, clearly a, I think I can say that the UW failed to monitor this protest. And if they were able to monitor what's going on inside of these, they might have been able to prevent the vandalism against the painting.
Maybe,
and the
building. Look, these kids can seem to do whatever it is they want to do. They get away with it for the most part. It's disgusting that it's even happening on this campus. But again, this is the kind of thing that happens when you allow it. I'm sorry you had to experience this, but I am certainly grateful as someone who, you're not Jewish, but you decided to step up and become an ally in a way that I think actually does matter. And I'm glad that you did it. I'm glad other people saw it. And I'm certainly glad that the folks on the anti-Semite side realize that they're not the ones who, get to decide whether or not someone is going to express themselves as being pro-Israel. So thank you so much for sharing your story. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Can I add one thing?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think the UW Daily released several articles and a statement about what happened inside the hub. And according to the newest statement from Daily UW, it says that the anti-Semitic protesters inside called one of the reporters of Daily UW, which is a pretty left-leaning student newspaper of the university. So they called one of their reporters a disgusting person of color.
Yep.
So I think it's clear that they are not progressive. They are not pro anything. They are just anti-Israel, anti-Zionism. And I think, you can clearly see that they are anti-Semitic.
Yeah, they're bigots of all different stripes. They hate pretty much everyone who doesn't agree with them. And if you God forbid, you have a quote-unquote person of color who doesn't view the world the way that they do, and it's mostly white people, by the way, who are in the progressive movement, they'll say that you're not black enough, you're not Asian enough, you're not gay enough, you're not Muslim enough. It's despicable. But again, it is, at least they're consistent. I will give them that. They're consistently horrific in every way, shape, and form. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Of course. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. Don't forget, our local tax expert and advocate Greg Nunn wants you to know the IRS is going after older cases very aggressively, as aggressively as they're going after the new cases. So regardless of the situation that you're in, if you owe money to the IRS, be smart. Go with Greg Nunn of Nunn Better Tax Resolution. He's going to help. Google NUNN, Nunn Better Tax Resolution.
Is it woke or compassion that Washington State lets drug addict moms keep their kids without rehabbing? Join me Tuesday morning at 6 a.m. or I'll hide the sun again.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rand Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that. Look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Services. They're available online at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore the stories coming out of Seattle, and instead we focus on all of the communities that you live in and care about most. We start in Renton because there is a deadly virus spreading at dog parks all across Washington State, but apparently there's a hot spot for transmission over at a popular park in Renton, and it's getting a lot of folks, pretty concerned. You're out there with your dog. You're going for a run or for a little bit of a walk on a beautiful day. Not today, though, of course, because today was hideous, almost to punish people who are interested in the eclipse. But, you're going out there and all of a sudden you end up getting your dog sick, unintentionally, of course. And it's causing a lot of, let's just, consternation, I suppose. And, we're talking about a disease that is very contagious. It's a virus, parvo, which I'm sure some folks have heard of, especially if you're a dog owner. Very quickly, just I don't want to put this at the end to keep you wondering, even though it might be good for ratings to just keep you guessing which park. It's, Petrovitsky Park. in Renton. Apparently, it's very, very popular. So King 5 went down there. They spoke to a bunch of folks who've got their dogs saying, hey, you know, maybe you don't want to be here right now because it's a hot spot for parvo and it's going to kill your dog. So why don't you, you know, get skedaddle. Alicia Dolman is with the Happy Tales Animal Hospital out in Renton. She spoke to King 5 about some of the warning signs to look out for.
We have been seeing such a big fluctuation of parvo positive pets. Can cause bloody diarrhea. If your pet's lethargic, doesn't want to eat, vomiting, then 9 times out of 10, you should probably get your pet checked.
Well, what's the 1 time out of 10 in which you wouldn't get your dog checked if they've got bloody diarrhea, aren't eating, very lethargic? Like, what? What's the 1 time out of 10? I'm not a vet, but I feel comfortable saying this. 10 times out of 10, if any of those symptoms are occurring, you should at a bare minimum contact your local vet. Okay, maybe one of all of them, you don't have to go to a vet, but you should probably maybe just call. I'm just going to say 10 out of 10. Because that's just absurd. Now, they say over at the hospital, they've only been open for about 9 months, and yet they've had between 10 and 12 parvovirus cases. And unfortunately, one of the cases was a dog that did not make it. And so they're all saying, please, please, please be careful. Understand that parvo can pass from dog to dog. If you don't scoop your pet's poop, this is something that people need to take very, very seriously.
If people don't scoop their poop, I know it's law, but
dog poop.
It's really to help prevent the spread of any kind of diseases, whether it be worms, parvo, whatnot. If another animal smells that poop on a walk, then they can contract it that way. Came from Petrovsky Park, so it's been a really big concern for us.
So again, if you know, just be on the lookout. We know that these stories are coming up like mad right now, and I can never quite tell if they're overhyping for the sake of, you know, just putting making sure that pet owners are aware of what's going on, and you go a little bit overboard so that people take this seriously and stop it from truly spreading. Obviously, there's not a single person who's a dog owner who wants to, you know, lose a dog to a virus like this. So just be on the lookout, but more importantly, pick up after your dog because your dog's poop might be spreading a vicious disease. Plus, it's just gross, and sometimes I step in it, and then I'm kind of trying to figure out if it was human or animal-based poop. It's just a big nightmare. Meanwhile, in Redmond, in Arlington, an Arlington couple owns a breeding farm for French bulldogs, but in Redmond, they had a van with 3 French bulldogs inside, and it ended up getting stolen. It's a 76-year-old woman and her 86-year-old husband. They run Sky Meadow Farms. According to Como TV, they said their van was stolen in Redmond on April 5th. And they had dogs inside. 2 of the 3 just had major surgery, quote, that leaves a large incision on their stomachs with staples in. So this is disturbing on all sorts of different levels. Elsie Whitney is the owner of Sky Meadow Farm. She's a 76-year-old. She spoke with Como TV. She just wants her dogs back.
The more we can do to get those dogs home and my husband's van, the better off. 2 men in a small black pickup truck drove over from the Taco Bell store. One got out, walked around the van, and got in, and then took off with the van.
Ugh. So, you know, I'm going to assume that they just wanted the car or what was in it. Assuming they didn't know it was a dog. Like, I don't think they were targeting the dogs, which is either better or worse news. And I don't know which one it is. Because you can argue it's good news that they weren't targeting the dogs and maybe they did the right thing and then they, you know, turned the dogs in to some shelter. I'm not going to hold my breath there. The bad news is if they didn't want the dogs, they might not care about the dog's well-being. And so what they might end up doing is either just release it into the wild, and these are French bulldogs. They are not going to be able to fend for themselves for long. Or just discarded them in a different way, in ways I don't even want to talk about, because I like dogs more than I like humans. And again, because the dogs are sick, they need their medicine, which I'm going to go out on a limb and say it probably didn't get stolen by responsible people who will then get you the medication you might need. Sky Meadow Farm is offering a reward for the return of the van with their dogs. It makes it, not to make a joke, it does make it sound like they won't give you an award unless you get the van and the dogs. But something tells me that if you get the dogs, that will probably be good enough for Sky Meadow. But I'm not making any promises on their behalf. Here's more from Elsie.
We've got a lot of effort and time into this, and we're hoping that eventually we'll be able to retire, but now I'm not too sure.
Because they obviously, you know, make money off of these dogs. Although, I kind of wish Como didn't include that part. Just like a little bit. Because now it makes it seem like this was all about the money and less so about love of animals. And I know they're breeders. I know that they have financial attachment to this. And that's, there's no problem for me, at least, with that. That makes total sense. They also breeders treat their animals as if they're their own forever, right? They treat them very, very well. So I'm not saying anything is different here. I just don't like that clip specifically because it gives off the wrong impression. Finally, as we head to Shoreline, there's the owner of a gas station who spoke with Cairo 7 TV. He's pretty livid that a burglary suspect was able to just drive away from cops as they were there, because officers still can't legally chase after the people. It's not June 1st. Just after 5 a.m. on April 5th, there is a Shell gas station in Shoreline. It was burglarized. And you can see via surveillance footage, a man in a U-Haul truck. He stops in front of the locked doors. He uses a saw to break open the lock. Then he tries to pry the door open with the largest crowbar I think I've ever seen. Like, it's insane. And at that point, because he's struggling so much, he attaches a chain with a hook to the door and ties the other side to the U-Haul and then just decides to tear the front door open. See, he thought he would be able to get in just on his brute upper body strength. And I'm looking at the footage of the break-in, like, this dude is just struggling. He is just not able to get this door open. And, you know, again, he's got the biggest, I've seriously never seen a crowbar this big. He's hitting it. It almost looks like a hockey stick large. And it might as well have been a hockey stick because he's just not been able to get this door open. So he ends up tearing off the door. Then he goes inside and his face is covered. It looks like I can't tell if it's a bandana on top of his head or he's bald, but you can't really tell anything other than, you know, it's a man. The footage from inside of the store shows him filling a large garbage bag with a whole bunch of cigarettes and vapes, which is something that you can easily resell and bring in a lot of money, at least in the context of this kind of job. He tries to take a display outside, but ends up mostly spilling the contents on the sidewalk because this guy's a total idiot. Now, the cops were called immediately. Once the Shell station owner got an alarm that this was happening, calls 911, and he's waiting for the cops to get there as he's watching the burglary unfold via his security cameras from home. Like, he's watching this, likely feeling helpless, not knowing exactly what they're supposed to do, because you're not supposed to just drive over to your business and try to intervene. You have no idea who this guy is. He could be armed. But just hoping for the cops to get there. So he told Cairo 7 TV that the cops did get to the gas station. The U-Haul truck was still there when they got there. And you can see in the surveillance video, the man getting into the truck's passenger side, then driving away with red and blue police lights reflecting off of the gas pumps, meaning they were already there. Cairo 7 says the truck speeds away, and seconds later, a police officer stands by the broken front door. Now, it doesn't look like Cairo 7 spoke to the cops on this one, but they said the owner said the police weren't allowed to chase the suspect because of the current pursuit law that, thanks to you, will soon be no more. Soon. Fingers crossed. I'll wait until the policy actually, the initiative actually goes into effect before I even hold my breath. I'm not expecting anything, but you never know in Washington State. And obviously, this owner is pretty upset. He didn't want to identify himself for fear of, I don't know, retribution, although we know precisely which Shoreline gas station this is. They printed in the Cairo 7 story, so maybe it didn't matter if you gave your name.
To me, the police is not doing their own job.
Oh, in this case, by the way, he spoke with Fox 13.
You know, I was really, really frustrated that time, and I told the police officer, I mean, you guys need to step up. Otherwise, we feel very unsafe. My employees feel unsafe. Yep. We live in Shoreline for 35 years, city of Shoreline. We have never seen these kind of problems, what we're seeing for last year or, you know, over a year. My wife feel unsafe. We don't let our kids come outside because we just feel unsafe.
What have I said over and over and over again? I know I'm becoming a bit of a broken record here, but I've said this over and over and over again. Number one, you're hearing from people who say over and over that I've lived here for, insert the amount of years, and it's never been this bad. I've lived here all my life. It's never been this bad. And then, of course, I've said number two, you now have businesses that are getting hit more than one time. And it's almost becoming the rule now that if you have someone who's the victim of a crime, chances are this is not the first time. And in this case, according to Cairo 7 TV, they say a couple months ago, someone used a car to ram into the front of the gas station, stole his safe, cigarettes, and more vapes. At the time, the total damage was $30,000. And guess what? Insurance didn't cover it. The same way they're not covering this, what happened over the weekend. So unfortunately, this is going to continue. And I said over the weekend, it was Friday. Unfortunately, this is going to continue to happen. And even with the law change going into effect, there's going to be some time before there's essentially catch up, where the culture starts to shift around crime, around this kind of crime. I don't know how long it's going to take. It's probably going to take some pretty high profile coverage of crooks who end up getting chased and then arrested, because otherwise I could guess that a lot of these crooks will say to themselves, oh, sure, they changed the law, but I bet you they don't enforce it. Why would they enforce this? They don't enforce all the other laws. And so they might just take that chance. So anytime there's a case in which they don't get away and they do get chased, we're going to be highlighting the heck out of it. I think that's really important to do so that the bad guys actually start figuring out, oh, there will be consequences. I just don't know how long it's going to take. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, you get to pick the news. Story number one. I'm going to go over the three solar eclipse myths and misconceptions. Or story number two. The White House is responding after Pope Francis condemned gender theory. Oh, how will the devout Catholic respond? Well, we'll find out if you want me to. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show.
You pick the topic on The Jason Rand Show.
Indeed you do. And you all want story number two. And I can't remember if in my head I cheated this one. Do you remember? Did I cheat on this one? Did I pick one because I wanted to do it? I don't think I did. I think this was two completely, I'll be honest, they were just completely random at the last minute. But they were both interesting to me. But you want to know a little bit more about how the Biden White House is responding to Pope Francis, who earlier today, I don't know if anyone was expecting that news today, but the Vatican came out and said gender identity is incredibly dangerous, silly, and stupid. Please stop doing it. They didn't say it in so many words. They were more eloquent than I was, and it was in I think Italian. Is he Italian or Latin? I can't remember.
The Pope? He's from Argentina.
Argentina. Yeah, the last one was Italian, right? Did I make that up?
Or no, was it from Pope Benedict was German.
I must have said, what? There was an Italian Pope in a movie that I watched recently. I
mean, most of them historically have been, but
I don't know this. I'm a Jew. I mean, come on, man. So Pope Francis today declared that gender theory is ungodly, essentially. And so it came up to Karine Jean-Pierre today to get a better understanding of where the president stood on this. Like, what was his response to the Pope? And you got, for the most part, what you might expect. She didn't want to be direct on what President Biden thinks about this. I imagine he will be asked this question because, remember, he is the devout Catholic who goes to church every Sunday. They like to throw that out there while also saying he supports abortion up until a baby's first cry. I mean, these are folks who say there should be no limits to abortion, and they call us crazy. They call us extreme. They want no limits at all. So she said, we're pleased to see that the document further the Vatican's call to ensure that LGBTQ plus are protected from violence and imprisonment around the world. However, the president will continue to be an advocate for the rights, safety, and dignity of the LGBTQ plus community, including transgender people here in the U.S. Well, that, I mean, they're the T in LGBTQ plus. So it's not we support the LGBTQ community as well as the transgender America. It's in the letters. And in fact, everything's in the letters because of the plus. You go in and you find out, and it's funny because as a member of the community, I look up some of the gender identities and sexualities and stuff. Some of them I've never heard of. Some of them I legitimately have never heard of. And I remember doing a segment for Tucker on an issue similar to this. And I needed to pick out the various gender identities I wanted to highlight in the segment because I had total control over that, and I had to give it to them ahead of time so they can spell it out and put it up on the screen. And I picked the ones that I could not find Google definitions for. Like, I legitimately Googled some of these things, and I'm pretty sure they were just made up. I'm pretty sure they literally just made it up, that someone one day said, I identify as whatever. There was a word that was just noises. It wasn't even like a word. It was like, and I don't know what that is. I don't know how to spell it. I just kind of looked at it and said, I think it says, I couldn't find it on Google.
It's all very arbitrary. I mean,
you think? She said, I'm going to be really careful. The president's role to litigate internal church policy, that's not his role. So I'm going to be super careful there. Oh, yeah, because they never speak about things that they have no direct control over. But I can speak to the president's stance, and he's always been very clear on the importance of protecting or having protections for the transgender community. The Pope didn't dispute that necessarily. I mean, the conversation that we've been having over and over and over again, where the vast majority of this country, and I mean the vast majority, are on exactly the same page, which is gender theory is just that. It's theory. It's fringe. It is a position that only the most fringe of academics and left-wingers hold. And what it does is deeply harm kids especially. The church wrote, regarding gender theory, whose scientific coherence is a subject of considerable debate among experts, the church recalls that human life in all of its dimensions, both physical and spiritual, is a gift from God. This gift is to be accepted with gratitude and placed at the service of the good. Desiring a personal self-determination, as gender theory prescribes, apart from this fundamental truth that human life is a gift, amounts to a concession to the age-old temptation to make oneself God, entering into competition with the true God of love revealed to us in the gospel. See, more eloquent than what I said, he said. Like, that stuff is stupid. Stop it. They were better. That's good. It is interesting, though, because at some point you can make the argument that doing any kind of cosmetic surgery then is playing God, the way that it was phrased, right? And I don't think that's what he's saying, but I don't know. He didn't do a paper on that, or the church didn't. Did you have something to say? He was so ready.
Yeah,
we'll go to a break.
Not really.